This podcast is offered by Wildflowers and Sangha. A Dharma Talk by Roshi Amy to SLR Hollowell.
Good day. Bonjour. Bon dia. Earlier today, for those of you who were present this morning, I left you with a koan, which was to enter the day and walk through the day with spring mind. And when I say I left you with this koan, it's a koan because it leaves us with the question, what is spring? What is mind? What is Sunday? And I try to encourage you to enter the not knowing that koans entail by saying, go into the day without memory. So without a memory of what Sunday was last Sunday, or what spring was last spring, memory that actually last spring on this day, we were also having a retreat. It was our first online retreat. We were supposed to have been in Coimbra, and because of the pandemic, we moved online. So I asked you to go without memory, go into this day without memory of other days, of other moments, to go into it without desire, so without wanting it to be a certain way, without wanting to do something else, without wanting to be enlightened today, without some hopes for, I hope I'll have time to go to the market so I can make lunch later, or who I will see online, or what Roshi will say, or without hopes, without hoping, desiring for the sun, or the birds, or the whatever arises. And without understanding, so without saying, oh yeah, I get this. I get what spring is. I understand how the plants grow. I understand that the equinox is the moment when the day and the night are the exact same length. And I understand how it arises, that the world turned, the movement of the earth and scientific explanations of equinox and spring and the entire process of life and death. So I said, go into the day without understanding too, without understanding what this day is. And I would push it even more without understanding what this is, what it is, and without understanding who it is. So who is going into the day? What is day? What is spring? What is Sunday? This is what a koan brings us to, is it's a creative process, actually, of opening to the not knowing. And I gave you those kind of tips of how to do that. Putting aside desires, putting aside memory, putting aside understanding. So that you can stay in the questioning. Stay in the freshness, stay in the beginner's mind, as Suzuki Roshi famously told us, I think. you know, more than 50 years. Well, I think the book was published 50 years ago, actually, for the first time. And it's a book that is world famous just for bringing us back to this spring mind. Not knowing, not having an idea. The beginner, as we say, you know, in the beginner's mind, anything is possible. In spring mind, everything is new. In the expert's mind, however, the expert understands, remembers, and so says, oh yes, I know how this works, and has a lot of expectations, therefore, desires. And therefore, it's a really small window of opportunity in the expert's mind. There isn't much possibility for anything new. For anything new to arise, there has to be this opening and letting go of what has come before. So, this is what spring mind is. And so when I encouraged you to go into the day, I gave you this koan. And of course, as most of you know, my practice, I've worked with koans for, you know, the better part of my adult life. And I've deepened my understanding of koans while letting go of that understanding. That's the trick. And the nature of the koan practice allows me to do that, to at once become familiar with the process of and the tool of koans while staying open to them, because that's the nature of the koan practice. So, and what this you know, it's a way of life. It's a way of being in the world, koan practice. It's a way of being with what is here now, with all that is life. It's a way of meeting others' difficulties. It allows us to walk through the difficulties of life. And we know there are a lot of them. And we're living in a very difficult time from many different perspectives, political, cultural, social, economic, ecological. A lot of difficulties are presenting themselves before our eyes. And we can you know, I said we can walk through the difficulties, but I would say walk into the difficulties. Be with the difficulties with freedom. Because we are coming to them, we're meeting them with this, you know, sometimes we say not no mind. But it's really staying in the questioning, staying in the what is it? What is this right here now? And it doesn't change the conditions. It doesn't change the, you know, the fact that we're facing an ecological disaster, an economic disaster, a health disaster. It doesn't change any of that. However, it does change how you experience it. It changes how you then act when confronted with them, because you're free. You're not limited by your ideas, your projections, your desires, your understanding, your trying to understand, because often it's that we don't understand. And it's not a not understanding. It's not a confusion that comes from this not knowing of koan work that I'm talking about. I can be free and act freely when meeting these challenges, because I have peace and in my being, because I can trust. I think as an artist, intuitively, I think I always was in contact with what koans were about, although I never formulated it like that until I started practicing them. But as a poet, there's this leap of faith, and sometimes I lose touch with it, and it's very dark time in a writer's life, in a poet's life, when we lose touch with that, because we have this leap of faith. I call it a leap of faith, but it's a leap into the unknown, that we trust that the next word, the next line will arise, and that it will be poetry. I think I mentioned at some point a few weeks ago when he died, the American poet Lawrence Ferlin Getty, who was one of the great poets of the 20th century, and who was one of the founders of the Beat Movement. He first published Allen Ginsberg, Anne Waldman, some of the great American poets. And he said, he was playing off of something Stendhal said about the novel, but he said, I have to find this quote so I don't misquote it. Stendhal said something like, it's here somewhere in my notebook. Okay. A poem is a mirror walking down a strange street. And Stendhal said something like, the novel is a mirror qui se promène sur une route inconnue, or something like that. A novel is a similar thing about the novel. But this thing about the poem being a mirror held up to a strange street, this speaks to me in terms of koan practice, because it's a mirror reflecting what is, but it's as if we're seeing it, it's strange. It's not how we thought it was. Like sometimes I walk down my street, which I've lived on now for 25 years, and it's hard to believe that I've lived here for 25 years, but I have. And sometimes I walk down the street and I try to do that. I try to be a mirror walking down a strange street, as if I've never seen this street before, and see it through the eyes of someone seeing it for the first time. And so as a poet, I know that, and artists know this. I don't really know who among you might recognize that in terms of art, but maybe. However, as it relates to Zen practice and the work with koans, it takes us to a deep spiritual level that not all artists will go to. They will go to this place in their work, but it might not be a spiritual place of discovery that they go to, or it's a different kind of discovery. So in the koan practice, we're asked to do that, to walk down our street as if we've never seen it before, as if we've never been there before. And that's what I was suggesting to you this morning. Go into this day as if you've never been here before, because you haven't ever been here before, you know? You have never been on this day here now. So go into it like that. Wow, Sunday, you know? Wow, spring. Wow, March 21st. Wow, none of that. Wow, sitting. Wow, these people on the screen. You know, many of you here on the screen, we've become familiar. I knew everybody pretty much before, but we've become familiar with each other in this past year because we've been sitting here looking at each other on the screen so frequently. And yet, when the day comes, when we are actually physically together again, it will be such a huge moment of discovery. It will be totally new. You know, we'll see people and be like, wow, I thought he was much taller than that. Or, I didn't know he had shoes like that. Or, you know, I don't know, whatever. I didn't know that she walked that way. Even if it's someone who we have seen before, we've forgotten. Let's hope that we've forgotten. Let's hope that we aren't holding on to some memory, some expectation, desire, some understanding, you know. We have people appearing in the screens. We have Isabel's son. Sometimes we have the cats. Sometimes we have a dog. We never know what will arise. And can we receive it as thus, fresh, new? I think I said a few weeks ago something about leading a 360-degree life. And if we come to the day, to the moment, which is a big concept, the moment, the day, but we can let go of that concept, we can be free of that concept if we can not be caught by our memories, desires, and our understandings of it. You know, so I gave you this koan of go into the day like this, but the big koan is who am I? And of course, that is, many of you know, that's the koan that I have deep affinity with because that was my koan. That's how I came to this practice. But there's also the big koan of what is it? The koan of what is it to be a mortal human? What stays? What goes away? What is it to be? What is here? You know, what is now? Corinne Sensei talked about this on Thursday night, this the whole notions of time. And what that means for how we live our lives when we have a concept about time and when we are just you know, just being. Now I don't want to go back to what Corinne said, however, it comes down to just saying yes to what is. And this koan of coming to the day with just, I don't know what this day is. I don't know what spring is. I don't know what Sunday is. I don't know what a day of practice is a way of freeing ourselves to just be. It's a way of, it's a practice, koan practice is a way of including everything. That's why I say saying yes to everything. And what's interesting is, you know, if we look back on the how this koan practice arose, it comes from China in the 9th century, when there was Buddhists, practitioners were persecuted. It was a dark time where, you know, the Confucians, you know, the followers of Confucius and the Taoists reigned. I mean, that was what China was about, actually, in terms of spirituality. And as we see always happens with, you know, when spiritual, what starts out as a deep spiritual practice becomes entrenched and becomes doctrine, and then power becomes involved and resources become involved and money becomes involved and control becomes involved. And so the Confucians and the Taoists were, I wouldn't say all of them were, but let's say the powers that be in those schools were, again, they didn't want this new Buddhist thing to happen. And they didn't want those people to have access to the emperors and everything that that entailed. And so they were persecuted. I heard someone compare it to when, you know, different Christian sects were persecuted, the Protestants in France, or then in England when, you know, Henry VIII took over and persecuted Catholics. And all, we've seen this happen all the time, right? So the Buddhists were being persecuted. And so they basically went into hiding. And they no longer had any money. They didn't have any resources. So they formed basically rural agricultural communities. And took care of themselves. The people, most of the monks were forced to disrobe. I think any monk under 50 or something was forced to disrobe and go out and become a lay person. And so they formed these what looked like just rural villages and communities to practice together, but their practice and their work became one, which is the root of what our life is, right? You know, they were practicing in daily life. They had no choice. It was a practice of meditation and action, of life and practice are one. And they developed koans from this. Or maybe they met this, this challenge as a koan and said, well, what is the, you know, what is working in the field? And came to realize that working in the field is practice, you know, that as we say, someone recently was working on this koan of holding empty-handed yet holding a rake. That koan comes directly from that practice of planting the fields, of you know, growing the food. You know, we say chopping wood, carry water. That one comes from there too. That is practice. And so these became, koan practice came out of this. And it was a whole environment, you know, a whole way of being, which was then, at once the emperor, I forget who it was, was persecuting them, died, I think. And the power changed and they could become free again. But they maintained this way of practice and way of being. And we still have that today. When we have our retreats, you know, we come together as a community and we work together. It's a very important part of our practice is working together and preparing our food and recognizing 72 labors brought us this food. We should know how it comes to us. So we recognize all of the ways that it came to us. But that is a koan too. You know, say 72 labors, it's a random number, but what are all those labors? How did this food come to me? What is this food? How can I recognize it? How do I honor it? You know, how do I honor this? We honor it by fully appreciating it, enjoying it. Whether, you know, our discursive mind will say it's a good cook or a bad cook, and we'll say, oh, this is good food or bad food. But if we stay in this don't know mind of koans, it's neither good nor bad, it's just what it is. And and that just what it is always present. That's how things are. But we add our opinions, our memories, our attachments, we add all that on and make things really complicated. We make our lives complicated, we make other people's lives complicated, we destroy our home, which is the earth. You know, I'm going from the small to the great, but it's all the same, right? If you don't know something, you know, if you come to the earth as without having an idea, you know, I like to think of the first people who came from Europe to what they called the New World, North and South America. And they came and they said they were discovering the world. Well, that world had always been there. And there were people who had always been living there, and animals and flowers and trees and mountains and all had always been there. Always, this is a big term too, but however, they were discovering it for the first time for themselves. Had they come to it and stayed with that spirit, that mind of discovery, that mind of not knowing, it would be a different world today. But because they came to it with a mind of memory, of trying to understand and desire, then that's a mind of, that's a conquering mind, you know. That's conquest. That's trying to dominate, to hold, to change what is. Now that's just an example that comes to mind because I, you know, I'm a native of North America, and that has deep meaning for me as a deep cause of sadness and guilt to some respect, and a need to repair, but also just as a human being who is witnessing how, and it's not only in North America that this happened or happens. You can find examples of this everywhere in our own street, you know, in our own household, we can find examples of this. So I encourage you to, you know, come to the day with this mind of not knowing. And then you can truly appreciate the day. You can truly appreciate what you meet. In the days of those dark days of when Zen was being persecuted in China, a lot of these people, you know, these Zen teachers, they just went off and lived ordinary lives because they had no choice, which I identify with greatly because that's what we do. We have not been forced to do that by, you know, an oppressive power. In a sense, we're forced to do that because we live in the world where merchants reign, right? And so we have to work and earn money, and in a way that we might not have had to if it was a different kind of society that we lived in. But I identify with that, and I'm touched by some of what they chose to do. And one of the famous ones is the teacher who chose to become a ferry boat, to run a ferry boat. So a boat that went from one side of, I think it was a lake, I don't think it was a river, but went from one side of the lake to the other. And so he had this boat that he built, and he just carried people across from one side of the lake to the other all the time. Which, you know, I've read some things about this story that they say the name of the teacher was Ganto, but the time that it doesn't really fit with Ganto, who is a famous Zen teacher. It doesn't really matter so much historically who it was. It has meaning for us, just even if it's just a folk tale or something. It's interesting that a Zen teacher would choose to be a ferry boat captain, because that's what Zen teachers do anyway. We just carry people from one side to the other. And actually, we, you know, in the famous joke is when the ferry boat's on the other side, and the person is calling to the ferry boat saying, "I want to come to the other side." And the ferry boat captain calls back, "You're already there." In fact, this is what Zen teachers do. We have the ferry and we carry you from one side to the other. But in fact, you end up realizing that you already were on the other side, that there is no other side. And to even like riff on the Buddha's image of the raft is just the teachings. But once you get to the other side, you don't keep carrying the raft around on your back. You put it down and you leave it for someone else who needs to come along. Or you use it as a ferry boat to continue ferrying people back and forth. And apparently this guy, this teacher, would ask, I don't know the story so well, but I know he would ask when someone would come, and they had to, I think there was something like, they had to pound on the board on the side of the river so he knew they were there on the side of the lake. And when he heard the pounding, he would say, "Who is it?" or "Who are you?" And this is also, you know, so he's throwing this koan to them. So even in just his everyday life of providing a service, a real service where it was needed to carry people from one side of the lake to the other, for him that was practice. For him that was teaching. And I don't know how many people realized it, that there's a famous story that I forget now of a woman who has a baby or something involved with it, but it doesn't matter. My point is just that koans help us, or are a way of being in the world, let's say. Every moment is a koan. I gave you one this morning, and you can stay with it for the rest of the day if you would like to. And for the length of your days, you know, every day you can say, "What is this day?" Come to every day with spring mind. I want to leave some time for questions or comments or anything you would like to share. I missed your dedications this morning, so if anyone wants to tell me what those dedications were. If anyone wants to add one. It's a good practice to dedicate, as an artist, I read someone say, for artists, we should dedicate before we start and after we finished, and then dedicate the results, because it's a way of letting go, of not identifying with the results. of not identifying with the effort, of not identifying personally with the practice, and not identifying with the result. So anyone want to say what those dedications were this morning? Debbie?
Yeah, I dedicated my practice and would like to continue dedicating my practice to the recovery of a friend of mine whom I already prayed for is a big term, but a couple of weeks ago, about a month ago, she fell and broke one side. And then a couple of days ago, she fell again and broke the other side. And she's in a great deal of pain. So I asked to dedicate my practice. Now, do we dedicate our own practice? Or we ask that everyone dedicate their practice? I don't know exactly how this is formulated. I dedicate my practice to the recovery of my friend Carol. And then everybody else does what they want. I don't know how it works exactly. That was what I did this morning.
Thank you. Well, we're all one, so we can all take that too. Isabel.
Joaquin just came in showing a drawing. Sorry. I meant that for a lot of it.
Can we see the drawing?
Yeah.
Oh, nice. This is a car, no?
It's a car.
Wonderful.
Great.
Great. Thank you. Very zen.
Yeah, every moment is a surprise.
Good.
I also did a dedication because now we are in London, because you know, Amy, already that Alban, my partner's father, died, so we are spending a time here, and my dedication was to him, and that he makes a path after his death with clarity. And other people died at this end of winter, and I feel this. I heard a lot of noise, a lot of news of people dying. So it was also dedication for this end of winter and this death that will bring another beginning. And so this was my dedication for everyone and for everyone. So, thank you.
Thank you. Those were the two dedications, or was there something else? No, that was it. Okay.
Can I?
Yes.
Hello. Good morning. I want to share something that goes along what you have been saying. 20 years ago, I was teaching philosophy in a school, my first year of teaching. And at some point, at the end of the year, I decided to go to India by walking. And so I gave up going again, teaching the other year, and abandoned my car, left my house, and preparing to go walking to India, to be in the present moment, let's say. And then I started to live in that for some time, in that what you mentioned in the beginning of your talk, in this freshness of being in Lisbon, in my case, and just seeing things for the first time. And well, after some time, I understood that my life was here and decided not to go. It was this. I was going to for searching for living in the here and now to do another place, and then in that decision I discovered, yeah, it's already here. Of course, it's completely evident, but by experience, it was. It's not that I couldn't go anywhere, but well, I understood that it was here, my life, and so. But for some time, there was this freshness of being a kind of stranger in my own city, in my own. Yeah, it was this. Thank you.
Thank you. That's a great story. Christine?
Yeah, thank you, Miguel. It reminded me of a conversation I had with someone when I was younger, and we were talking about holidays or something, that when you leave, in fact, nothing changes. The only thing that really changes is the way you look at things, that you look at things with a fresh view, but that you can have this fresh view any moment. And we were sitting in a small town where my school was, and we were watching the sunset, and that was really a deep teaching for me. I thought, yeah, he's completely right. You can at any moment enjoy what is right there in front of you. That was a long time before I met Zen and the practice. But it changed a lot for me in the way I think often if we are not satisfied with the lives we have at the moment, we think of elsewhere it's better. And we put our wishes on that elsewhere, but we can live fully what is in front of us. And so, yeah, thank you.
That's true freedom, is when we can just be with what is and free with it. What you say is, I think I may have quoted this before, but a quote from Proust, who says, a real trip of journey of discovery does not mean finding new landscapes. It means having new eyes. So, like you say, just means looking at what is here differently. And that's what koans do for us, help us to do. Joa?
Yes. yeah, what you're saying echoes for me the echoes with the word of mystery. And I think I had trouble for a long time with that word mystery, but I've come to realize how it's very much linked to the fact that we open ourselves to something that is not in the field of grasping, knowledge, knowing, and has to do with the immediacy and the not understanding and the letting go. So I that echoes for me that I don't want to say notion, but that word mystery.
Yeah, and there are things that sometimes when it's so overwhelming, the mystery, that we can't resist. You know, I'm looking at Hugo here, who just became a new father a few days ago for the second time. And I'm sure that his notion of mystery today is different than it was the week before, even though he's already had a child. I don't know if he wants to say anything about that, but the mystery of new life, you know, and that's spring mind, though. And that's, we can all have that. But some events like that, or death, is another one that throws us into the great mystery. What is it? What is this? You know, how did this come to be? Who am I? Who is that person who died? Who is that person who is born? What is it to be born? What is it to die? And Hugo sent me a picture this morning of his older son holding the new baby. And Benjamin's face is just so beautiful, luminous, this child, as if he, this is the older boy, as if he too is experiencing that mystery. Just really, really powerful. And it's something very human. So thanks, Joa, for bringing up that word mystery, because it is. That's what it's about. It's not about clearing up the mystery. It's about making the mystery clear, that there is mystery, that it is mystery.
Yeah, this. It was only because when Hugo go away and it stayed this yellow chair, only without Hugo, I remember that Hugo become father, and it was, oh, this yellow chair is bring me this memory. Hugo, it's not there. It's only the yellow chair, you know? And then you speak about this. It's mysterium. The mystery. Thank you.
Thank you. Isabel.
Just came to my mind something about the spring mind, and because I was talking about death and the winter, that it's not a koan as well, or a questioning of what is an autumn mind, what is a winter mind, what is a summer mind, with all the seasons. How we can question that. It just came to my mind this.
So I could say, to which mind did that question come? You know, if I were playing the Zen master to the ultimate. But it's a good question, because that is how immediately we think. And can we have spring mind in the winter? Can we have spring mind in the summer? Can we have winter mind in the spring? Each to, you know, the Bible says it too, to every season. So each season is different. And to just stay with his metaphor of spring mind, would be to appreciate the newness of it, I would say. Maybe the autumn mind would be to appreciate the passing, the decline. Maybe the winter mind would be to appreciate the kind of dormant quality of it, that things are in the deep quiet and stillness of it, maybe. And the summer mind might be to appreciate the fabulous flowers and the magnificent sun and the beach and whatever summer is wherever you are. They're all spring mind in that sense, to appreciate what is. I mean, I would say just that that's Zen mind, or beginner's mind. just to appreciate what is. José Eduardo.
Hello. Yes, when I'm listening to all of you, what I think is, and that's something that, of course, is always puzzling me about this now, this presence of mystery, as Joe said, of the unpredictability of things that happen. But I think it relates to the idea that we are always interacting. And in that sense, every situation, of course, is new. But the fact that you just also wanted to say, oh, this is new, this is also a little bit, I think, artificial. If you wanted to say all the time, this is new. For me, what really leads me to understand this newness is the way I interact with it. And sometimes with this interaction, of course, kind of memories come or associations come. And in a way, these associations are memory, but they are also new when they come in this moment. So this is to say that when you were speaking about, it was what was coming to my mind, what this morning you were talking just a few moments ago about Ferlinghetti. And you were talking about springtime. And that led to, of course, to my own memory and to my own cultural references. And I remember that, perhaps you are familiar with this very beautiful movie by Scorsese. So I'm going back to memory, but at the same time, I want to say that this memory is fresh because you led me with your talk to think about it. I was not going to think about it if you had not said so. So what I want to say is that you talked about Ferlinghetti, and all of a sudden it came into my mind this beautiful images in this movie by Scorsese on the last waltz by the band. I don't know if you have listened to it. It's a big hit, right? It really still touched me very deeply. So I don't know if you are familiar with it. It's beautiful movie and beautiful music. And Last Waltz is this record of the band played with many people and with Bob Dylan, I think, as well. And in this movie, there is a moment in which Ferlinghetti, I think it's Ferlinghetti, who shows up and is saying a poem. No one gets his point because there is this deep kind of rock excitement going on, and he's going on stage. He doesn't sing anything, and he just says a poem, which in fact is the beginning of this very beautiful poem by a medieval writer called Chaucer, which is about the beginning of springtime. it's the very first lines of this poem is a famous English poem, is the Canterbury Tales, is exactly about springtime. So you see, all of a sudden I'm activating a lot of memories, but I think in a way they are just new, although it's memories. I don't know if it makes a point. So that was the thing I wanted to say. Thank you very much anyway.
Thank you. And can we be free to just let these associations, just let these things arise in our mind? If we have a closed mind, we wouldn't do that. If our mind were closed, we wouldn't allow the last waltz to enter into a Dharma talk about some Zen koan, right? It's because our mind functions that way. And we can let it be free in that way without becoming attached to those memories and those associations, just letting them be as they are. And that's what the koan the way of being in the world as koan is, it's staying in the questioning. So if new becomes a concept, as you point out in the beginning, it's not new anymore. And so if we stay in this space of questioning, of valuing the value of not knowing, that's how we cultivate the ground of newness, I'd say, without it being conceptual. But of course, it does. And so then we have to do it again. We have to question again. That's why we have so many koans. You know, in our practice, we have this, you know, really long curriculum of koans that we go through. Because it's endless. In fact, every moment, your life is, as Dogen said, the Genjo koan. Your life is the koan. So that we don't become stuck and hang on to what is new. It's funny, I saw The Last Waltz a long time ago. I don't remember if it was Ferlin, was it Allen Ginsberg or was it Ferlinghetti? Or were they both there?
Yeah, it's one of them.
I think it might have been Allen Ginsberg, but I'm not sure. Anyway, Ferlinghetti could have done it too, so.
But you know, of course, or people know this very beautiful beginning of this poem, which is about spring. So everything makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. It's all interconnected, yeah, and interdependent, yeah. And that's why it's always new.
Yeah.
We're about out of time, but if someone wants to ask a last question or say something, we have time for that. Debbie?
Yeah, I wanted to thank you for mentioning that understanding, because I've had a couple of weeks of analysis of some of my relationships, and I realized when I started sitting this morning that I am absolutely flooded by my new understanding, and I'm very impressed with it because it's new understanding, and oh, I see the relationship between this and that, and after a while, I can't make it stop. I couldn't make it stop. So it's good to have that on the list of the things that I don't necessarily have to drag around all day long. Thank you, Roisin.
Yeah, well, because if you think of the word in English, to stand under, so it's like you're stuck under this thing that you understand, right? But you can move on, you know, you can move out from under it, as you say. You don't have to drag it around all day. It's the raft, you can put it down, it's okay. Keep moving. Okay, thank you, everyone. Always a pleasure. I will be back in a few hours. Actually, how many hours is it? It's now, so it's 4.5 hours, right? No, 3.5 hours. Yeah, 3.5 hours. So bon appétit if you're going to have lunch, and have a good afternoon otherwise. See you later.
Thank you. Thank you.